Movie review time. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com always join me to review the new movies, and we say hello to Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And hello to Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All righty, then. So, hey, let's do some on-demand stuff, shall we?
Okay.
All right. Here's the first one. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Asmodexia.
Asmodexia.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on there?
It was a Spanish film about a grandfather and his granddaughter who are roaming the countryside performing a very valuable service to people in need, namely exorcisms.
Wait, they're both exorcists?
Both exorcists.
Oh, okay.
Him and the granddaughter. Granddaughter's right. Like 13, 14 years old, something
okay.
like that.
All right.
And as they're going around the countryside, they soon we sort of become aware that there's possibly a sort of a grander exorcist type conspiracy going on amongst some of the locals around the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie is about leading up to, you know, how are these two saviors, if you will, going to prevent this.
All right.
I think, as I've said to you and probably said during the on-demand segment many times this year, exorcist movies I'm getting quite tired of.
Yeah, remember when they didn't make them for years?
Yes.
And then suddenly in the past, like, 8 years, there's an exorcist movie, like, every week.
So not just, I mean, they had like the Rennie Harlan exorcist movie, and then you
right.
had like the Emily Rose thing, which I think was really the real catalyst.
That was, and I actually liked that movie.
Yeah, I didn't, but there have been several.
It was like it was like Law and Order with an exorcist.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Right.
It was.
Yeah,
man.
With a really insulting ending. But I think there have been like six exorcism movies this year. This is actually probably the best one, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this one I think you will really dig, actually.
Okay.
It took an original slant with the exorcism type story, and surprised me all the way up to its really creepy climax. This one's worth checking out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
All right. Asmodexia.
Asmodexia.
All right. All right. What
it
about
off the tongue?
What about Believe Me?
Believe Me. Desperate, broke, and out of ideas, four college seniors start a fake charity to embezzle money for tuition.
Well, that sounds charming.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hell, man.
It's only a sin if you get caught, according to the.
Wow.
Thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I won't be watching that one. All right. What about Days and Nights?
Days and Nights.
This one I'm curious about.
Yeah, reckless desire wreaks havoc over Memorial Day weekend as a family confronts the volatile and fragile nature of love, inspired by Chekhov's The Seagull,
right.
set in rural New England in 1984.
And it's got a great cast.
Good cast. William Hurt, Allison Janney, Katie Holmes, Jean Reno. Yeah, there you go.
All right. And William Hurt is bearded.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know why I make a note of that, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good People.
Good People stars James Franco and Kate Hudson and Tom Wilkerson discovering a cache of cash in their dead tenant's apartment. A couple in debt take the money and find themselves the target of a deadly adversary, the thief who stole it.
I saw the trailer for this.
Mm-hmm.
It looks weird.
I get sort of a Shallow Grave
yeah.
type vibe off of it just without the energy.
Yeah, well, I didn't like Shallow Grave.
I didn't either.
Yeah. All right, Jack and the Cuckoo Clock Heart.
Yeah. This one is an animated film, a 19th century drama, about a man whose heart was replaced with a clock when he was born. The situation dictates that he should avoid feeling strong emotions, love most of all, but he just can't keep his feelings under wraps.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right. These are all, by the way, available.
That's an interesting idea for a movie.
It is, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
These are all, by the way, available on demand. And Plastic is next.
What we got here? Sam and 40 run a credit card fraud scheme, but when they steal from the wrong man, they find themselves threatened by a sadistic gangster. That's the actual wording here. They need to raise £5 million and pull off a daring diamond heist to clear their debt.
All right.
There you go.
Okay, and then finally,
inspired by a true story.
I'm curious about this one, White Bird in a Blizzard. You saw this one? Not crazy. Not crazy about the director at all. But I do. I do like the cast. Tell us about White Bird in a Blizzard.
This one, I saw this one at Sundance this year. The director in question is Greg Araki, Doom Generation, amongst others. The star Shailene Woodley as a girl. And it's set in 1988. And her mother, played by Ava Green, disappears. And the movie sort of goes between the present and the past. So we sort of see her mother unraveling before our very eyes with sort of manic depression. And then Woodley's character sort of discovering her sexuality with the new boy in town. Her father is played by Christopher Maloney, who's also sort of into a – goes into kind of a spiral as the mother goes missing. I did not like this film at all, really. It's full of all like sort of the Greg Araki style and everything, and I know a lot of people are fans of Mysterious Skin. This is, seems to be the one that seems to be going for that sort of vibe, but it just doesn't work. It's not that interesting. I love Ava Green like so much.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in, you know, her scenes are really terrific, but like the stuff in the present, just sort of standard, you know, teen sexuality stuff mixed with a lot of Greg Araki, you know, substituting color for emotion and things like that.
Yeah.
So this, it just doesn't work. But, you know, if you want to see more of Shailene Woodley, you get to see quite a bit of her in this movie.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I don't know if I want to sit through that, though.
No, you fast forward.
Yeah, you could do
if
that.
If you want to pay $9.99 or whatever it
right.
is.
Right, yeah,
fast
exactly. All right, I can wait.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's get to some of the stuff that's in the theaters. Colin.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Tell us about Take Me to the River.
All right. Well, this is a documentary narrated by and actually sort of hosted by Terrence Howard. And it's about, you know, the Memphis music scene, or I don't know if you call it a scene, but the history of all the artists that came out of Memphis. And, of course, a big part of that is Stax Records.
Yeah.
This is sort of like the Dave Grohl movie, Sound City, where you get all these old artists and new artists coming together to record in this space. And really the purpose of it is to sort of, you know, it's kind of a passing of the torch in a way. All these older artists who are coming in to record this album being produced by, North Mississippi All-Stars, that band. A couple of guys from that band are producing this record where, you know, they take, you know, these old songs from, you know, back in the day and infusing them with a new sort of modern sensibility with hip-hop artists and rappers coming in to, you know, play along or sing along or rap along with all these other artists. And it's a pretty cool movie. There's not much to it. It's pretty straightforward. But, you know, if you're interested in, you know, this kind of history, this music history, you definitely want to see it. It's also, of course, you know, kind of goes through the civil rights movement and, you know, the assassination of Martin Luther King, of course. The highlight of this movie is this 10-year-old singer/rapper who's going by the name of Lil Peanut. That's LILP-Nut. This kid is amazing, and you could just see him. He kind of walks in the room and just sort of blows everybody away, you know, of all ages, with just his delivery, his charisma, and everything. It's kind of a cool thing to see all these, you know, artists who just want to work with him all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And there's also some great stories, you know, being told about, you know, the recording and some of the racism they had to deal with back in the day. And I think you get more out of it if you're really invested in music history and rock music and everything. You might not get that much out of it. It does kind of drag a little bit, but it's got a great, I mean, the music is phenomenal.
Awesome.
Thing.
Okay.
This is a good documentary worth seeing. And it's only playing at the
Landmark
Century.
Right. So. Landmark Century at Clark and Diversey. Take Me to the River. All right, guys, yeah. Hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, there we go. We got Colin, we got Eric, and we got more movies to review right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The lovely Amy Guth and Red Eye Remix is up at midnight. We're reviewing the movies. Eric and Colin are here. And let's get back to these guys. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right, Eric, tell us about Kelly and Cal.
Okay. Kelly and Cal. Stars Julia Lewis as a new mom, a new suburban mom, which is posing a little challenging for her because she's grasping the new, sort of her new life as a mom when she used to be more of a sort of a punk rocker. She was in a band back in her youth. So now she's an adult and facing these responsibilities and sort of longing for this period that she once had. Right next door to her is a teenager who's actually wheelchair bound, and they form sort of an interesting friendship. And sort of the new neighbor sort of encourages her to sort of get back and sort of explore that that youth that she once had. And the two of them strike up this friendship over the course of some time. And well, it could possibly leads to some further complications. This is a movie that starts off really interesting. I'm quite a fan of Juliette Lewis. I really like her.
Me too.
It's nice to see her get you know, not just another supporting role, but actually sort of a, you know, a little bit of a meaty role that she could possibly, you know, sink her teeth into. There's been, you know, way too many stories about this kind of topic in a way, but the approach that they take to it, and they don't just rush the process and not just going for sort of just the easy cliches of rediscovering, you know, one's past and whether or not that's the best course of action. The first half of this movie, I think, works pretty well. Then when the movie tries to complicate things a little bit more, the relationship between the two characters becomes much more strained and far less believable. And then it just sort of goes into free fall in sort of the last 35, 40 minutes of the movie, which is really shame because I was on board with liking this movie until it starts taking these sort of difficult turns, and the movie just didn't seem to know how to deal with it.
Mm.
So I root for Juliette Lewis, and she's good in the movie, but this one is kind of a miss.
Oh, that's too bad because I like her too, man. I've always liked Juliette Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's great. And all right. Well, that's called Kelly and Cal. It's playing at Wilmette. That's the only theater it's playing.
Just there.
Is the Wilmette Theater. So, all right, you guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Eric and Colin are here, and we're going to have more movies to review after we take a break for the news, which is coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Again, if you want to call in, it's 312-981-7200. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. Phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also send your texts to 312-981-7200 here till midnight. And we're reviewing the movies with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. And let's get the guys back on the air. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Colin, man.
You
tell us about The Equalizer.
All right. Well, Denzel Washington plays Robert McCall, who works at a Home Depot type store, and seems to be just a regular guy with a few minor OCD issues. Goes by the same routine every day. He's very charming and likable amongst his coworkers. And he goes to the same coffee shop every night, and there he meets a teenage hooker played by Chloe Grace Moretz. And he sees the kinds of thugs who won't let her leave the streets. She and the two of them become good friends. But eventually she gets beat up pretty badly and ends up in a hospital. So he tracks these guys down, and they turn out to be Russian mobsters. And he ends up in a room with these guys and offers them a deal to just, you know, he wants to buy her off the streets. He offers them money, you know, and says, here, take this money, and then I just want the girl, and then we're done. They, of course, don't really, they're not crazy about that idea. But he, before he leaves the room, he rather nonchalantly takes them all down with his fists and their weapons. And without too many scars of his own, he leaves the room. And word gets around, and the Russian mob tries to track him down, which they eventually do. And soon there are more scenes, like much like the one I just described, of Denzel Washington beating the hell out of and killing Russian mobsters. And there is there's a little bit of his backstory is explained later on. There's a scene with Melissa Leo and Bill Pullman that sort of goes into his history. The movie does have entertainment value. I will say it is kind of fun to watch, you know, Denzel Washington, you know, just kind of walk into a room and, you know, very, you know, just beats the crap out of these guys and walks out unscathed, unfazed, and rather nonchalant about it. But at the same time, there's not much in the way of suspense here. You know, once you see that first scene, and I believe the body count was 6 in that first scene, 5 or 6, you realize this guy can pretty much do anything. And he's not really he's not easily threatened. He's not easily fazed by anything that he's doing or seeing or hearing from these guys. So you pretty much figure, well, he's going to get out of this situation or these situations okay. He'll be fine. And that's kind of takes something away from the movie. I mean, I like a thriller where something's at stake, and, you know, there's a sense of danger for the main character, and you sort of sit there wondering, well, how is he going to get out of this one? And this movie doesn't really have that going for it. At the same time, like I said, it does have entertainment value. It is fun to, you know, see these guys get pummeled by Denzel Washington. You know, he's getting up there in age, but he can still do, you know, the action movie goods. He's still got it. But I kind of think this is a bit of a miss just because it's rather redundant after a while. So very mixed review for me.
Okay. All right, Eric.
I'm a bit on the positive side, actually. I think the first hour of this movie, I actually like quite a bit. I like the setup of the Denzel character. Denzel is just incredibly watchable on screen, no matter what he's doing. So, seeing him in this role, and this was basically based on the CBS show from the 80s with Edward Woodward, which I never watched.
Oh, I loved that show, man.
You loved it, yeah. Everyone, I mentioned the show,
man.
And people who watched it really loved
that
it.
That show kicked ass.
Well, there you go. So maybe that helps with the enjoyment factor of this movie. Not, you know, I like.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. No. But go ahead.
Okay. I did enjoy the movie. I think that in the second half, like Colin said, the suspense factor really isn't there, and, you know, setting the climax, having the really hip, intelligent Russian mobsters set up an entire climax in the Home Depot with tons of weapons at everyone's disposal is not exactly the smartest thing to do. So if you enjoy the senseless violence in the last half hour, that's cool. but it does lose a bit of something. I'm still giving it a slight recommendation just because of Denzel. Another thing that I didn't like about the movie is that it really sort of throws the Chloe Grace Moretz character away.
She's absolutely. Sort of
she's a catalyst for this entire thing, and I'm actually surprised that they bring her back in the final scene. I'm just like, I was actually kind of hoping they didn't do it, just so I could say they just completely just dumped her.
Yeah.
But they don't. They lose her for about an hour and 10 minutes, and then bring her back for the final scene. So there's that. But I'm still giving it a slight recommendation.
Okay, I'm more with Colin on this. There are things in it that were cool. I'm just a really big fan of the TV series, and when I first heard about this, I was like, is it based on the TV series? Because I was like, really? There's a mid-80s, late 80s TV show with a British dude playing the role? I'm like, what? I think some of it, you know, like Colin said, there's a certain amount of entertainment there to watch, you know, Denzel Washington beat the crap out of guys. That's kind of fun. But I thought Chloe Grace Moretz was completely wasted in this movie. And I love her. And I don't think that she should have been in. I think they could have cast anybody in that role. Because somebody as great and as gifted as her deserves a better role. So that was like one of my main problems with the movie was how much of a waste it was for her, who was just so gifted and so awesome. I'm just a huge fan of the TV show, and I just kept thinking, man, I you know, the TV show's better. I just kept thinking.
Did Edward Woodward time his kills?
No.
No,
he did a sub. No. He did. But he, you know, like the thing is. It's the plot is slightly different than what the TV series was, and I'm not really sure who. I mean, did the people who created the TV show, did they have anything to do with this movie?
I have no idea.
Because I mean, it's not they kind of changed what the plot of the original show was about. They moved it. He didn't work in a Home Depot.
Isn't that what kind of what the ending is? Like,
yeah.
The ending of the movie is sort of the setup for the TV series.
It's pretty much what it was. So this does work as though, I guess it's a prequel.
Prequel.
Except that it's not Edward Woodward, it's Denzel Washington, and I found the whole thing a little...
Well, he probably got a facelift and changed, you know.
That's what happened. That's exactly what happened. So, the TV... By the way, Stuart Copeland did the music for the TV show, so right there, there's also another plus right there. But anyway, I'm more with Colin on this. It's not bad. There's some pretty cool stuff in it, but I was underwhelmed, and I think it's way too long. It just seemed very long to me.
It's long.
Yeah, it just seemed really... Yeah. What's the running time? Like, it's got to be, what, two...
126 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's over two. Yeah. It just felt long. So, anyway. All right, well, that's The Equalizer. You guys hang on. We got some more movies to review. Hold on a second.
Okay.
All right, and that's Eric, and that's Colin. We got more movies to review right here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue here till midnight. And we got a couple more movies to review here with Colin Suter and Eric Childress. The phone number is 312-981-7200. And we welcome Colin and Eric back. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Thank you.
Eric, I know that you reviewed the Jimi Hendrix movie. What's it called? All Is By My Side.
All Is By My Side, yes.
Now, just we got to do this really quickly because we got to have to review the Box Trolls.
Mm-hmm.
But am I to understand that they didn't get any music rights?
That's correct. So what's the point?
What the hell is that?
When your big finishing move is Andre Benjamin as Jimi Hendrix performing Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
You got to be kidding me.
So that's the finale of the movie, Nick.
That's ridiculous. Ridiculous! Why would you make a Jimi Hendrix movie if you can't get the music rights?
I don't know, but John Ridley did it.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, that's out. It's in three theaters.
It's awful.
But it just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's just awful.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell? All right, Colin, tell us about the Box Trolls.
All right. Well, this is the latest from Leica, who are responsible for Coraline and Paranorman. They do the stop-motion stuff. And this is a story of Box Trolls, who are what they sound like. They're little trolls that live in boxes, or at least they wear boxes that they hide in when they need to. Not like a turtle in a shell. And they live underground and are sort of seen as pests who should be exterminated. The city where they live in, called Cheesebridge, is ruled by Lord Portlyrind and his two helpers, who are, you know, wear distinguishing white hats that symbolize their power. But there's an exterminator who would love to be a part of that, and who vows to rid the town of all the box trolls in exchange for a white hat of his own, so he can be, you know, one of the rulers. And the Lord also has a daughter, a young daughter, who has not only seen the box trolls running around town, but has also seen a boy with them. And he's around the same age, and he's been living with the box trolls all his life, and he pretty much thinks he is one. The boy and the girl become friends, and the movie, thematically at least, starts to go along the same lines as Paranorman, when the kids tried to stop the townspeople from killing all the zombies. This is sort of along those same lines, saying, you know, the box trolls are not monsters, they're not here to kill you, they're actually cute and harmless. So this is definitely a different animal from the other two films. This is really more of a kind of a Terry Gilliam-like movie, almost along the lines of Baron Munchausen, and a little of the City of Lost Children.
Yeah, that's what came to my mind too. City of Lost Children.
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of an acquired taste in a way. The cast is made up of, or the characters are made up of, mostly like circus sideshow freaks. Not quite as endearing as Paranorman or Coraline. But I still like this movie. I really do. I love the design of it. I love the detail of it. I never got tired of looking at the screen of this film, and the inventiveness of it. Because nobody's really doing this sort of thing anymore, that I can think of. This is, you know, not, it's not an easy movie to love, but it's definitely an easy movie to admire, just because of the energy of it. I kind of wish there was more there emotionally, but what there is in terms of imagination, I think, is pretty remarkable. And so I'm giving this movie a recommendation.
Okay. Eric.
Yeah, I like the movie too, but with a few more reservations. One of the things that my heart kind of sank a little bit when I sort of realized very early on that the movie was sort of taking the Ratatouille approach to the story. Instead of having the little baby hang out with the box trolls, that little sequence at the beginning is probably maybe my favorite sequence in the movie. Mm-hmm. When I saw the baby literally morph into a young boy before my eyes, I was just like, oh, okay, we're going to go here, and the young boy is going to take center stage, when I'd rather spend time with either the box trolls or the villains. I think the voice work, I think, is pretty exceptional across the board. I think Ben Kingsley as the villain is really terrific. Frost and Simon Pegg are in there as well. And like Colin said, I always enjoyed looking at the movie, even though I wasn't always involved in the movie. There were times when I was almost finding myself just sort of nodding off a bit.
Yeah.
But my eyes were then constantly drawn to either something that was on the screen, or my ears heard something really exceptionally funny. It's not in the same league, obviously, as Coraline or Paranorman. But this movie, like Colin said, I think you sort of admire and appreciate more than you can actually really, really like. So yeah. It's a minor recommendation for me.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can. I mean, I guess I can recommend it for all the reasons that you guys are. But I was really disappointed with this. And I think it's because the bar was set so high with Coraline and Paranorman. You know what I mean? Because those movies are so great, and you know, especially Paranorman. Every time I watch that movie, I love it more, and I get more out of it. In terms of technique, and in terms of you know, looking at this movie, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. The work that these guys do is, you know, it's sort of unparalleled, and it's always a pleasure to watch. And the technique and everything that was the talent that was involved in putting this movie together is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I just wish the script was better. I wish I was emotionally involved. I mean, Coraline and especially Paranorman, those movies both really moved me, you know, and I just didn't feel anything while I was watching this. And like you, Eric, there were times when I was just drifting off. And I just, because I love the first two movies that these guys have made, I think that's why I felt so deeply disappointed by it. But, I'm not going to tell people not to see this movie because, first of all, there haven't been a lot of great kids movies recently, you know?
Right.
And, you know, you take your kids to see something like this, and it really is. There's a lot of beauty on the screen. There's so much talent that went involved in making this, and so time-consuming. And so much thought and so much work went into it, just on the technical end, that it's worth taking your kids to see that. I was just really disappointed. I think it's because it's unfair to continually, you know, compare the movies. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean it's a separate thing. Like Box Trolls is a completely different kind of movie than the other two. But I just kept sitting there going, man, this isn't nearly as good as the other two movies. Technically, fantastic, but outside of that, not so much. But I think we're all, I mean, I think maybe Colin liked it the most out of the three of us. But we're all like, you know, it's still, you know, a great piece of work, despite the fact that it's really, really flawed.
Yeah, I mean, I sat in a theater full of kids, and the kids seem to be enjoying it.
Good.
So,
well, that's good.
You know, that makes me happy.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, what do we got next week, guys?
Next week, we got David Fincher's Gone Girl.
Yeah, baby!
Oh, I can't wait.
I can't wait
either. We got Jason Reitman's Men, Women, and Children is opening.
We got
the Annabelle, the Conjuring prequel.
Yeah!
And Nicolas Cage in Left Behind.
Oh, man, it's going to be...
Nick, we kind of need you to see Left Behind.
Oh, I will.
We don't need anybody else to see it, but we kind of need you to see it.
All right, man. I will.
At least the last half hour.
Okay. All right. We're going to have some fun next week. Eric, Colin, thank you guys so much.
Sure thing.
All right, man. You take care. Bye. We'll see you later. There's Eric. There's Colin. And they join us every Saturday night.